Chapter 4. I felt safe for perhaps all of 3 minutes. I beat Carmela to the door and flung it open. He staggered in and immediately pushed the door shut behind himself and shot the bolt. There were lines under those light eyes, and he wasn't wearing a bright doublet and long hose. He needed a shave, and he had on a brown wool suit. He carried a gabardine overcoat over one arm and wore dark suede shoes. But he was random, all right, the random I had seen on the card. Only the laughing mouth looked tired, and there was dirt beneath his fingernails.
Corwin,
he said, and embraced me. I squeezed his shoulder. You look as if you could use a drink.
Yes, 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 yes.
He agreed, and I steered him toward the library. A hoot 3 minutes later. After he had seated himself with a drink in one hand and a cigarette in the other, he said to me,
They're after me. They'll be here soon.
Flora let out a little shriek, which we both ignored. Who?
People out of the shadows. I don't know who they are or who sent them. There are four or five, though, maybe even six. They were on the plane with me. I took a jet. They occurred around Denver. I moved the plane several times to subtract them, but it didn't work, and I didn't want to get too far off the track. I shook them in Manhattan, but it's only a matter of time. I think they'll be here soon.
And you've no idea at all who sent them? He stalled for an instant.
Well, I guess he's safe in limiting it to the family. Maybe Blaze, maybe Julian, maybe King. Maybe even you to get me here. Hope not, though. You didn't, did you?
Afraid not. How tough do they look? He shrugged.
If there were only two or three, I'd have tried to pull an ambush, but not with that whole crowd.
He was a little guy, maybe 5'6" in height, weighing perhaps 135. But he sounded as if he meant it when he said he'd take on two or three bruisers, single-handed. I wondered suddenly about my own physical strength, being his brother. I felt comfortably strong. I knew I'd be willing to take on any one man in a fair fight without any special fears. How strong was I? Suddenly I knew I would have a chance to find out. There came a knocking at the front door.
What shall we do?
Random laughed, undid his neckite, tossed it atop his coat on the desk. He stripped off his suit jacket then and looked about the room. His eyes fell upon the saber, and he was across the room in an instant and had it in his hand. I felt the weight of the .32 within my jacket pocket and thumbed off the safety catch.
Do? There exists a probability that they will gain entrance, therefore they will enter. When is the last time you stood to battle, sister?
It has been too long.
Then you had better start remembering fast, because it is only a matter of small time. They are guided, I can tell you. But there are three of us, and emotionally twice as many of them. Why worry?
We don't know what they are.
The knocking came again.
What does it matter?
Nothing. Shall I go and let them in? They both blanched slightly.
We might as well wait.
I might call the cops. They both laughed, almost hysterically. Or Eric, suddenly looking at her. But she shook her head.
We just don't have the time. We have the Trump, but by the time he could respond, if he chose to it, we'd be too late.
And this might even be his doing, eh?
I doubt it very much. It's not his style.
True, I replied, just for the hell of it, and to let them know I was with things. The sound of knocking came once again, and much more loudly. What about Carmela? I asked upon a sudden thought. Flora shook her head.
I've decided that it is improbable that she will answer the door.
But you don't know what you're up against.
Random cried, and he was suddenly gone from the room. I followed him, along the hallway and into the foyer, in time to stop Carmela from opening the door. We sent her back to her own quarters with instructions to lock herself in, and Random observed,
That shows the strength of the opposition. Where are we, Corwin?
I shrugged. If I knew, I'd tell you. For the moment, at least, we're in this together. Step back, and I opened the door. The first man tried to push me aside, and I stiff-armed him back. There were six. I could see that. What do you want? But never a word was spoken, and I saw guns. I kicked out and slammed the door again and shot the bolt. Okay, they're really there, but how do I know you're not pulling something?
You don't, but I really wish I were. They look wild.
I had to agree. The guys on the porch were heavily built and had hats pulled down to cover their eyes. Their faces had all been covered with shadows.
I wish I knew where we are.
I felt a hackle-raising vibration in the vicinity of my eardrums. I knew in that moment that Flora had blown her whistle. When I heard a window break, somewhere off to my right, I was not surprised to hear a growled rumbling and some baying. Somewhere off to my left, she's called her dogs, six mean and vicious brutes, which could under other circumstances be after us. Random nodded, and we both headed off in the direction of the shattering. When we reached the living room, two men were already inside and both had guns. I dropped the first and hit the floor, firing at the second. Random leaped above me, brandishing his blade, and I saw the second man's head depart his shoulders. By then, two more were through the window. I emptied the automatic at them, and I heard the snarling of Flora's hounds mixed with gunfire that was not my own. I saw three of the men upon the floor and the same number of Flora's dogs. It made me feel good to think we had gotten half them, and as the rest came through the window, I killed another in a manner which surprised me. Suddenly, and without thinking, I picked up a huge overstuffed chair and hurled it perhaps 30 feet across the room. It broke the back of the man it struck. I leaped toward the remaining two, but before I crossed the room, Random had pierced one of them with the saber, leaving him for the dogs to finish off, and was turning toward the other. The other was pulled down before he could act, however. He killed another of the dogs before we could stop him, but he never killed anything again after that. Random strangled him. It turned out that two of the dogs were dead and one was badly hurt. Random killed the injured one with a quick thrust, and we turned our attention to the men. There was something unusual about their appearance. Flora entered and helped us to decide what. For one thing, all six had uniformly bloodshot eyes. Very, very bloodshot eyes. With them, though, the condition seemed normal. For another, all had an extra joint to each finger and thumb, and sharp, forward-curving spurs on the backs of their hands. All of them had prominent jaws, and when I forced one open, I counted 44 teeth, most of them longer than human teeth, and several looking to be much sharper. Their flesh was grayish and hard and shiny. There were undoubtedly other differences also, but those were sufficient to prove a point of some sort. We took their weapons, and I hung onto three small flat pistols.
They crawled out of the shadows, all right.
I nodded.
And I was lucky, too. It doesn't seem they suspected I'd turn up with the reinforcements. I did a militant brother and around half a ton of dogs.
He went and peered out the broken window, and I decided to let him do it himself.
Nothing. I'm sure we got them all.
He drew the heavy orange drapes closed and pushed a lot of high-backed furniture in front of them. While he was doing that, I went through all their pockets. I wasn't really surprised that it turned up nothing in the way of identification.
Let's go back to the library so I can finish my drink.
He cleaned off the blade carefully before he seated himself, however, and he replaced it on the pegs. I fetched Flora a drink while he did this.
So it would seem I'm temporarily safe, now that there are three of us sharing the picture.
So it would seem.
God, I haven't eaten since yesterday.
So Flora went to tell Carmela it was safe to come out now, so long as she stayed clear of the living room, and to bring a lot of food to the library. As soon as she left the room, Random turned to me and asked,
Like, what's it between you?
Don't turn your back on her.
She's still Eric's.
So far as I can tell.
Then what are you doing here?
I was trying to sucker Eric into coming around after me himself. He knows it's the only way he'll really get me, and I wanted to see how badly he wanted to. Random shook his head.
I don't think he'll do it. No percentage. So long as you're here and he's there, why bother sticking his neck out? He's still got the stronger position. If you want him, you'll have to go after him.
I've just about come to the same conclusion. His eyes gleamed then and his old smile appeared. He ran one hand through his straw-colored hair and wouldn't let go of my eyes.
Are you going to do it?
Maybe.
Don't maybe me, baby. It's written all over you. I'd almost be willing to go along, you know. Of all my relations, I like Sex the best and Eric the least.
I lit a cigarette while I considered.
You're thinking, how far can I trust Random this time? He is sneaky and mean and just like his name, and he will doubtless sell me out if someone offers him a better deal. True.
I nodded.
However, Brother Corwin, remember that while I have never done you much good, I've never done you any special harm either. Oh, a few pranks, I'll admit. But all in all, you might say we've gotten along best of all in the family. That is, we've stayed out of each other's ways. Think it over. I believe I hear Flora or her woman coming now, so let's change the subject. But quick, I don't suppose you have a deck of the family's favorite playing cards around, do you?
I shook my head. Flora entered the room.
Carmela will bring in some food shortly.
We drank to that, and he winked at me behind her back. The following morning, the bodies were gone from the living room, there were no stains upon the carpet, the window appeared to have been repaired, and Random explained that he had taken care of things. I did not see fit to question him further. We borrowed Flora's Mercedes and went for a drive. The countryside seemed strangely altered. I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was that was missing or new. But somehow things felt different. This, too, gave me a headache when I attempted to consider it. So I decided to suspend such thinking for the non-see. I was at the wheel, Random at my side. I observed that I would like to be back in Amber again, just to see what sort of response it would obtain.
I have been wondering whether you were out for vengeance, pure and simple, or something more.
Thereby shifting the ball back to me, to answer or not to answer, as I saw fit. I saw fit. I used the stock phrase. I've been thinking about that too, trying to figure my chances. You know, I just might fry. He turned toward me then. He had been staring out of the side window and said,
I suppose we've all had that ambition. Or at least that thought I know I have. Though I dismiss me early in the game and the way I feel about it, it's worth the attempt. You're asking me, I know, whether I'll help you. The answer is yes. I'll do it just to screw up the others. Then what do you think of Flora? Would she be of any help?
I doubted very much she'd throw in if things were certain. But then what's certain at this point?
Or any.
Or any. I repeated so he'd think I knew what sort of response I would obtain. I was afraid to confide in him as to the condition of my memory. I was also afraid to tell him, so I didn't. There were so very many things I wanted to know, but I had no one to turn to. I thought about it a bit as we drove along. Well, when do you want to start?
Whenever you're ready.
And there it was, right in my lap. And I didn't know what to do with it. What about now? He was silent. He lit a cigarette, I think, to buy time. I did the same.
Okay, when's the last time you've been back?
It's been so damn long that I'm not even sure I remember the way.
All right, then we're going to have to go away before we can come back. How much gas have you got?
3/4 of a tank.
Then turn left at the next corner and we'll see what happens.
I did this thing, and as we drove along, all the sidewalks began to sparkle.
Damn, it's been around 20 years since I've taken the walk. I'm remembering the right things too soon.
We kept driving, and I kept wondering what the hell was happening. The sky had grown a bit greenish, then shaded over into pink. I bit my lip against the asking of questions. We passed beneath a bridge, and when we emerged on the other side, the sky was a normal color again. But there were windmills all over the place. Big yellow ones.
Don't worry, it could be worse.
I noticed that the people we passed were dressed rather strangely, and the roadway was of brick.
Turn right.
I did. Purple clouds covered over the sun, and it began to rain. Lightning stalked the heavens and the skies grumbled above us. I had the windshield wipers going full speed, but they weren't doing a whole lot of good. I turned on the headlights and slowed even more. I would have sworn I'd passed a horseman racing in the other direction, dressed all in gray, collar turned high and head lowered against the rain. Then the clouds broke themselves apart and we were riding along a seashore. The waves splashed high and enormous gulls swept low above them. The rain had stopped and I killed the lights and the wipers. Now the road was of macadam, but I didn't recognize the place at all. In the rearview mirror, there was no sign of the town we had just departed. My grip tightened upon the wheel as we passed by a sudden gallows where a skeleton was suspended by the neck, pushed from side to side by the wind. Random just kept smoking and staring out of the window as our road turned away from the shore and curved round a hill. A grassy, treeless plain swept away to our right, and a row of hills climbed higher on our left. The sky by now was a dark but brilliant blue, like a deep, clear pool sheltered and shaded. I did not recall having ever seen a sky like that before. Random opened his window to throw away the butt, and an icy breeze came in and swirled around inside the car until he closed the window again. The breeze had a sea scent to it, salty and sharp.
All roads lead to Amber,
he said, as though it were an axiom. Then I recalled what Flora had said the day before. I didn't want to sound like a dunce or a withholder of crucial information, but I had to tell him, for my sake as well as his own, when I realized what her statements implied. You know, when you called the other day and I answered the phone because Flora was out, I have a strong feeling she was trying to make it to Amber and that she found the way blocked. At this, he laughed.
The woman has very little imagination. Of course it would be blocked at a time like this. Ultimately, we'll be reduced to walking, I'm sure, and it will doubtless take all of our strength and ingenuity to make it, if we make it at all. Did she think she could walk back like a princess in state, treading on flowers the whole way? She's a dumb bitch. She doesn't really deserve to live. But that's not for me to say yet. Turning right at the crossroads.
What was happening? I knew he was in some way responsible for the exotic changes going on about us. But I couldn't determine how he was doing it, where he was getting us to. I knew I had to learn his secret, but I couldn't just ask him, or he'd know I didn't know. Then I'd be at his mercy. He seemed to do nothing but smoke and stare, but coming up out of a dip in the road, we entered a blue desert, and the sun was now pink above our heads within the shimmering sky. In the rearview mirror, miles and miles of desert stretched out behind us, for as far as I could see. Neat trick, that. Then the engine coughed, sputtered, steadied itself, repeated the performance. The steering wheel changed shape beneath my hands. It became a crescent, and the seat seemed further back. The car seemed closer to the road, and the windshield had more of a slant to it. I said nothing, though. Not even when the lavender sandstorm struck us. But when it cleared away, I gasped. There was a god-awful line of cars all jammed up about half a mile before us. They were all standing still, and I could hear their horns.
Slow down, it's the first obstacle.
I did, and another grist of sand swept over us. Before I could switch on the lights, it was gone, and I blinked my eyes several times. All the cars were gone and silent, their horns. But the roadway sparkled now as the sidewalks had for a time, and I heard Random damning someone or something under his breath.
I'm sure I shifted just the way he wanted us to, whoever set up that block, and it pisses me off that I did what he expected, the obvious.
Eric?
Probably. What do you think we should do? Stop and try it the hard way for a while, or go on and see if there are more blocks?
Let's go on a bit. After all, that was only the first.
Okay. Who knows what the second will be?
The second was a thing, I don't know how else to describe it. It was a thing that looked like a smelter with arms, squatting in the middle of the road, reaching down and picking up cars, eating them. I hit the brakes.
What's the matter? Keep going. How else can we get past them?
It shook me a bit. He gave me a strange, sidelong look as another dust storm came up. It had been the wrong thing to say. I knew. When the dust cleared away, we were racing along an empty road once more, and there were towers in the distance.
I think I've screwed him up. I combined several into one, and I think it may be one he hasn't anticipated. After all, no one can cover all roads to Amber.
True, I said, hoping to redeem myself from whatever faux pas had drawn that strange look. I considered Random. A little weak-looking guy who could have died as easily as I on the previous evening. What was his power? And what was all this talk of shadows? Something told me that whatever shadows were, we moved among them even now. How? It was something Random was doing, and since he seemed at rest physically, his hands in plain sight, I decided it was something he did with his mind. Again, how? Well, I had heard him speak of adding and subtracting, as though the universe in which he moved were a big equation. I decided with a sudden certainty that he was somehow adding and subtracting items to and from the world that was visible about us to bring us into closer and closer alignment with that strange place, Amber, for which he was solving. It was something I'd once known how to do, and the key to it, I knew in a flash, was remembering Amber. But I couldn't. The road curved abruptly, the desert ended, to give way to fields of tall, blue, sharp-looking grass. After a while, the terrain became a bit hilly, and at the foot of the third hill, the pavement ended and we entered upon a narrow dirt road. It was hard-packed, and it wound its way among greater hills upon which small shrubs and bayonet-like thistle bushes now began to appear. After about half an hour of this, the hills went away, and we entered a forest of squat, big, bold trees with diamond-shaped leaves of autumn orange and purple. A light rain began to fall, and there were many shadows. Pale mists arose from mats of soggy leaves. Off to the right somewhere, I heard a howl. The steering wheel changed shape three more times, its latest version being an octagonal wooden affair. The car was quite tall now, and we had somewhere acquired a hood ornament in the shape of a flamingo. I refrained from commenting on these things, but accommodated myself to whatever positions the seat assumed and new operating requirements the vehicle obtained. Random, however, glanced at the steering wheel just as another howl occurred, shook his head, and suddenly the trees were much higher, though festooned with hanging vines and something like a blue veiling of Spanish moss, and the car was almost normal again. I glanced at the fuel gauge and saw that we had half a tank.
We're making headway.
The road widened abruptly and acquired a concrete surface. There were canals on both sides full of muddy water. Leaves, small branches, and colored feathers glided along their surfaces. I suddenly became lightheaded and, but dizzy.
"Breathe slowly and deeply,"
said Random, before I could remark on it.
"We're taking a shortcut, and the atmosphere and the gravitation will be a bit different for a time. I think we've been pretty lucky so far, and I wanted to push it for all it's worth, get as close as we can, as quickly as we can."
"Good idea."
"Maybe, maybe not, but I think it's worth the game. Look out."
We were climbing a hill and a truck topped it and came barreling down toward us. It was on the wrong side of the road. I swerved to avoid it, but it swerved too. At the very last instant, I had to go off the road, onto the soft shoulder to my left, and head close to the edge of the canal in order to avoid a collision. To my right, the truck screeched to a halt. I tried to pull off the shoulder and back onto the road, but we were stuck in the soft soil. Then I heard a door slam and saw that the driver had climbed down from the right side of the cab, which meant that he probably was driving on the proper side of the road after all, and we were in the wrong. I was sure that nowhere in the States did traffic flow in a British manner, but I was certain by this time that we had long ago left the earth that I knew. The truck was a tanker. It said Zenoco on the side in big, blood-red letters, and beneath this was the motto, "We Covier the World." The driver covered me with abuse as I stepped out, rounded the car, and began apologizing. He was as big as I was and built like a beer barrel, and he carried a jack handle in one hand. "Look," I said, "I'm sorry. What do you want me to do? Nobody got hurt, and there was no damage."
"They shouldn't turn goddamn drivers like you loose on Dye Road. You're a friggin' menace."
Random got out of the car.
"Mister, you better move along."
He had a gun in his hand. "Put that away." He flipped the safety catch off and pointed. The guy turned around and started to run, a look of fear widening his eyes and loosening his jaw. Random raised the pistol and took careful aim at the man's back, and I managed to knock his arm to the side just as he pulled the trigger. It scored the pavement and ricocheted away. Random turned toward me and his face was almost white.
"You bloody fool. That shot could have hit the tank."
"It could also have hit the guy you were aiming at."
"So who the hell cares? We'll never pass this way again in this generation. That bastard dared to insult the Prince of Amber. It was your honor I was thinking about."
"I can take care of my own honor." Something cold and powerful suddenly gripped me and answered. For he was mine to kill, not yours, had I chosen. A sense of outrage filled me. He bowed his head then, as the cab door slammed and the truck took off down the road.
"I'm sorry, brother, I did not mean to presume, but it offended me to hear one of them speak to you in such a manner. I know I should have waited to let you dispose of him as you saw fit, or at least have consulted with you."
"Well, whatever. Let's get back onto the road and get moving, if we can." The rear wheels were sunken up to their hubcaps, and as I stared at them, trying to decide the best way to go about things.
"Okay, I've got the front bumper. You take the rear and we'll carry it back to the road, and we'd better deposit it in the left lane."
He wasn't kidding. He'd said something about lesser gravitation, but I didn't feel that light. I knew I was strong, but I had my doubts about being able to raise the rear end of a Mercedes. But on the other hand, I had to try, since he seemed to expect it of me, and I couldn't tip him off as to any gaps in my memory. So I stooped, squatted, grasped, and started to straighten my legs. With a sucking sound, the rear wheels freed themselves from the moist earth. I was holding my end of the car about 2 feet above the ground. It was heavy, damn. It was heavy. But I could do it. With each step that I took, I sank about 6 inches into the ground. But I was carrying it. And Random was doing the same with his end. We set it down on the roadway with a slight jouncing of springs. Then I took off my shoes and emptied them, cleaned them with swatches of grass, wrung out my socks, brushed off the cuffs of my trousers, threw my foot gear into the rear seat, and climbed back into the front barefooted. Random jumped in on the passenger side.
"Look, I want to apologize again."
"Forget it. It's over and done with."
"Yes, but I don't want you to hold it against me."
"I won't. Just curb your impetuosity in the future, when it involves life-taking in my presence."
"I will."
"Then let's get rolling." We moved through a canyon of rocks, then passed through a city which seemed to be made entirely of glass, or glass-like substance, of tall buildings, thin and fragile appearing, and of people through whom the pink sun shone, revealing their internal organs and the remains of their last meals. They stared at us as we drove by. They mobbed the corners of their streets, but no one attempted to halt us or pass in front of us.
The Charles Forts of this place will doubtless quote this happening for many years.
I nodded. Then there was no roadway whatsoever, and we were driving across what seemed an eternal sheet of silicon. After a while, it narrowed and became our road, and after another while, there were marshes to our left and our right, low, brown, and stinking. And I saw what I'd swear to be a Diplodocus raise its head and stare down upon us. Then, overhead, an enormous bat-winged shape passed by. The sky was now a royal blue, and the sun was of fallow gold. We'd now got less than a quarter tank of gas.
Okay, stop the car.
I did this, and waited, for a long time, like maybe 6 minutes. He was silent then.
Drive on.
After about 3 miles, we came to a barricade of logs, and I began driving around it. A gate occurred on one side.
Stop and blow your horn.
I did so. And after a time, the wooden gate creaked upon its huge iron hinges and swung inward.
Go on in. It's safe.
I drove in, and off to my left were 3 bubble-headed Esso pumps, the small building behind them being one of the kind I had seen countless times before, under more ordinary circumstances. I pulled up before one of the pumps and waited. The guy who emerged from the building was about 5 feet tall, of enormous girth, with a strawberry-like nose, and his shoulders maybe a yard across. Gas man, what'll it be? Fill her up, I nodded, with regular. Gas man, pull it up a bit? I did, and asked random, is my money any good here?
Look at it.
I did. My wallet was stuffed with orange and yellow bills, Roman numerals in their corners, followed by the letters DR. He grinned at me as I examined the sheaf.
See, I've taken care of everything.
Great. By the way, I'm getting hungry. We lived around us. And we saw a picture of a gent who sells Kentucky Fried Chicken in another place, staring down at us from a big sign. Strawberry nose sloshed a little on the ground to make it come out even, hung up the hose, approached, and said, Gas man ate Drake Regums. I found an orange note with a VDR on it and 3 more with IDR. And passed them to him. Gas man, thanks. Check your oil and water?
Yeah.
He added a little water, told me the oil level was okay, and smeared the windshield a bit with a dirty rag. Then he waved and walked back into the shack. We drove over to Kenny Roy's and got us a bucket full of Kentucky Fried Lizard, Partez, and another bucket of weak, salty-tasting beer. Then we washed up in the outbuilding, beeped the horn at the gate, and waited till a man with a halberd hanging over his right shoulder came and opened it for us. Then we hit the road again. A Tyrannosaurus leaped before us, hesitated for a moment, then went on his way, off to the left. 3 more pterodactyls passed overhead.
I'm loath to relinquish Amber Sky.
Whatever that meant, and I grunted back at him.
I'm afraid to try it all at once, or we might be torn to bits.
Agreed.
But on the other hand, I don't like this place.
I nodded, so we drove on till the silicon plain ended and bare rock lay all about us. What are you doing now? Ventured.
Now that I've got the sky, I'm going to try for the terrain.
And the rock sheet became rocks as we drove along. There was bare, black earth between. After a while, there was more earth and fewer rocks. Finally, I saw splotches of green. First a bit of grass here and there, but it was a very, very bright green, of a kind like yet unlike that common on Earth as I knew it. Soon there was much of it. After a time there were trees, spotted occasionally along our way. Then there was a forest. And what a forest! I had never seen trees such as this, mighty and majestic, of a deep, rich green, slightly tinged with gold. They towered. They soared. They were enormous pines, oaks, maples, and many others, which I could not distinguish. Through them crept a breeze of fantastic and lovely fragrance. When I cracked the window a bit, I decided to open it all the way and leave it like that after I'd had a few whiffs.
The Forest of Arden.
I knew he was right, and somehow I both loved and envied him for his wisdom, his knowledge. Brother, you're doing all right. Better than I'd expected. Thank you. This seemed to take him somewhat aback. It was as if he'd never received a good word from a relative before.
I'm doing my best, and I'll do it all the way, I promise. Look at it. We've got the sky, and we've got the forest. It's almost too good to be true. We passed the halfway point, and nothing's bugged us especially. I think we're very fortunate. Will you give me a regency?
Yes, I said, not knowing what it meant, but willing to grant it. If it lay within my powers, he nodded.
You're okay.
He was a homicidal little fink, who I recalled had always been sort of a rebel. Our parents had tried to discipline him in the past, I knew, never very successfully, and I realized, with that we had shared common parents, which I suddenly knew was not the case with me and Eric, me and Flora, me and Kane and Blaze and Fiona, and probably others, but these I'd recalled I knew for sure. We were driving on a bare, dirt roadway through a cathedral of enormous trees. It seemed to go on forever and ever. I felt safe in the place. Occasionally, startled a deer, surprised a fox crossing or standing near the road. In places, the way was marked with hoofprints. The sunlight was sometimes filtered through leaves, angling like tight golden strings on some Hindu musical instrument. The breeze was moist and spoke of living things. It came to me that I knew this place, that I had ridden this road often in the past. I had ridden through the Forest of Arden on horseback, walked through it, hunted in it, lay on Vam back beneath some of those great boughs, my arms beneath my head, staring upward. I had climbed among the branches of some of those giants and looked down upon a green world, constantly shifting. I love this place, only half realizing I had said it aloud.
You always did.
There might have been a trace of amusement in his voice. I couldn't be sure. Then, off in the distance, I heard a note which I knew to be the voice of a hunting born.
Drive faster. That sounds to be Julian's horn.
I obeyed. The horn sounded again, nearer.
Those damn hounds of his will tear this car to pieces, and his birds will feed on our eyes. I'd hate to meet him when he's this well-prepared. Whatever he hunts, I know he'd willingly relinquish it for a quarry such as two of his brothers.
Live and let live is my philosophy these days. Random chuckled.
What a quaint notion. I'll bet it will last all of 5 minutes.
Then the horn sounded again, even nearer.
Damn.
The speedometer said 75, in quaint runic numerals, and I was afraid to go any faster on that road. And the horn sounded again, much nearer now. Three long notes, and I could hear the baying of hounds off to the left.
We are now very near to the real Earth, though still far from Amber. It will be futile to run through adjacent shadows, for if it is truly us that he follows, he will pursue us, or his shadow will.
What shall we do?
Speed, and hope it is not us that he follows.
And the horn sounded once again, almost next to us this time. What the hell is he riding, a locomotive?
I'd say he is riding the mighty Morgenstern, the fastest horse he has ever created.
I let that last word roll around in my head for a while. Wondering at it and wondering at it. Yes, it was true, some inner voice told me. He did create Morgenstern out of shadows, fusing into the beast the strength and speed of a hurricane and a pile driver. I remembered that I had called to fear that animal, and then I saw him. Morgenstern was 6 hands higher than any other horse I'd ever seen, and his eyes were the dead color of a Weimaraner dog's, and his coat was a light gray, and his hooves looked like polished steel. He raced along like the wind, pacing the car, and Julian was crouched in his saddle, the Julian of the playing card, long black hair and bright blue eyes. And he had on his scaled white armor. Julian smiled at us and waved, and Morgenstern tossed his head, and his Magni flint mane rippled in the wind like a flag. His legs were a blur. I recalled that Julian had once had a man wear my cast-off garments and torment the beast. This was why it had tried to trample me on the day of a hunt, when I dismounted to skin a buck before it. I'd rolled the window shut once more, so I didn't think it could tell by scent that I was inside the car. But Julian had spotted me, and I thought I knew what that meant. All about him ran the Stormhounds, with their tough, tough bodies and their teeth like steel. They too had come out of shadow, for no normal dog could run like that. But I knew for a certainty that the word normal did not really apply to anything in this place. Julian signaled us to stop then, and I glanced at random and he nodded.
If we don't, he'll just run us down.
So I hit the brakes, slowed, stopped. Morgenstern reared, pawed the air, struck the earth with all 4 hooves, and cantered over. The dogs milled about, their tongues hanging out their sides heaving. The horse was covered with a glistening sheen that I knew to be perspiration.
What a surprise.
In his slow, almost impeded way of speaking, and a great hawk that was black and green circled and settled upon his left shoulder. Yes. Isn't it? How have you been?
Oh, Catatoe, as always. What of yourself and Brother Random?
I'm in good shape. Random nodded and remarked.
I thought you'd be indulging in other sports at a time like this.
Julian tipped his head and regarded him crookedly through the windshield.
I enjoy slaughtering beasts, and I think of my relatives constantly.
A slight coldness worked its way down my back.
I was distracted from my hunt by the sound of your motor vehicle. At the time, I did not expect it to contain two such as you. I'd assume you are not simply riding for pleasure, but have a destination in mind, such as Amber. True.
True. May I inquire why you are here rather than there?
Eric set me to watching this road.
My hand came to rest upon one of the pistols in my belt as he spoke. I had a feeling a bullet couldn't breach that armor. Though.
Well, brothers, I welcome you back and I wish you a good journey. I'll doubtless see you shortly in Amber. A good afternoon.
And with that, he turned and rode toward the woods.
Let's get the hell out of here. He's probably planning an ambush or a chase.
With this, he drew a pistol from his belt and held it in his lap. I drove on at a decent speed. After about 5 minutes, when I was just beginning to breathe a bit easily, I heard the horn. I pushed down on the gas pedal, knowing that he'd catch us anyhow, but trying to buy as much time and gain as much distance as I could. We skidded around corners and roared up hills and through dales. I almost hit a deer at one point, but we made it around the beast without cracking up or slowing. The horn sounded nearer now, and Random was muttering obscenities. I had the feeling that we still had quite a distance to go within the forest, and this didn't hearten me a bit. We hit one long straight stretch, where I was able to floor it for almost a minute. Julian's horn notes grew more distant at that time, but we then entered a section where the road wound and twisted and I had to slow down. He began to gain on us at once again. After about 6 minutes, he appeared in the rearview mirror, thundering along the road, his pack all around him, baying and slavering. Random rolled down his window, and after a minute, he leaned out and began to fire.
Damn that armor. I'm sure I hit him twice and nothing's happened.
I hate the thought of killing that beast, but try for the horse.
I already have several times,
he said, tossing his empty pistol to the floor and drawing the other.
And either I'm a lousier shot than I thought, or it's true what they say, that it will take a silver bullet to kill Morgan Stern.
He picked off 6 of the dogs with his remaining rounds, but there were still about 24 left. I passed him one of my pistols, and he accounted for 5 more of the beasts.
I'll save the last round for Julian's head if he gets close enough.
They were perhaps 50 feet behind me at that point, and gaining, so I slammed on the brakes. Some of the dogs couldn't halt in time, but Julian was suddenly gone and a dark shadow passed overhead. Morgan Stern had leaped over the car. He wheeled then, and as horse and rider turned to face us, I gunned the engine, and the car sped forward. With a magnificent leap, Morgan Stern got them out of the way. In the rearview mirror, I saw 2 dogs drop a fender they'd torn loose and renew the pursuit. Some were lying in the road, and there were about 15 or 16 giving chase.
Good show, but you're lucky they didn't go for the tires. They've probably never hunted a car before.
I passed him my remaining pistol. Get more dogs. He fired deliberately and with perfect accuracy, accounting for 6, and Julian was beside the car now, a sword in his right hand. I blew the horn, hoping to spook Morgan Stern, but it didn't work. I swerved toward them, but the horse danced away. Random crouched low in his seat and aimed past me, his right hand holding the pistol and resting upon his left forearm. Don't fire yet. I'm going to try to take him.
You're crazy,
he told me as I hit the brakes again. He lowered his weapon, though. As soon as we came to a halt, I flung open my door and leaped out barefooted yet. Damn it! I ducked beneath his blade, seized his arm, and hurled him from the saddle. He struck me one on the head with his mailed left fist, and there were Roman candles going off all around me in a terrible pain. He lay where he had fallen, being groggy, and there were dogs all around me biting me and Random kicking them. I snatched up Julian's blade from where it lay and touched his throat with its point. Call them off, or I'll nail you to the ground. He screamed orders at the dogs, and they drew back. Random was holding Morgan Stern's bridle and struggling with the horse. Now, dear brother, what do you owe to say for yourself? There was a cold blue fire within his eyes, and his face was without expression.
If you're going to kill me, be about it.
In my own good time, somehow enjoying the sight of dirt on his impeccable armor. In the meantime, what is your life worth to you?
Anything I've got, of course.
I stepped back. Get up and get into the back seat of the car. He did this thing, and I took away his dagger before he got in. Random resumed his own seat, and kept his pistol with the single remaining round aimed at Julian's head.
Why not just kill him?
I think he useful. There is much that I wish to know, and there is still a long way to travel. I began to drive. I could see the dogs milling around. Morgenstern began cantering along after the car.
I'm afraid I won't be worth much to you as a prisoner. Although you will torture me, I can only tell you what I know, and that isn't much.
Start with that, then.
Eric looks to have the strongest position, having been right there in Amber when the whole thing broke loose. At least this is the way I saw it, so I offered him my support. Had it been one of you, I'd probably have done the same thing. Eric charged me with keeping guard in Arden, since it's one of the main routes. Gerard controls the southern seaways, and Cain is off in the northern waters.
What of Benedict?
I don't know. I haven't heard anything. He might hear his blaze. He might be off somewhere else in shadow and not even have heard of this thing yet. He might even be dead. It's been years since we've heard from him.
How many men have you got in Arden?
Over 1,000. Some are probably watching you right now.
And if they want you to go on living, that's all they'll do.
Your doubt is correct. I have to admit, Corwin did a shrewd thing in taking me prisoner rather than killing me. You just might make it through the forest this way.
You're just saying that because you want to live.
Of course I want to live. May I? My...
Why?
In payment for the information I've given you.
Random laughed.
You've given us very little, and I'm sure more can be torn from you. We'll see, as soon as we get a chance to stop. Eh, Corwin?
We'll see. Where's Fiona?
Somewhere to the south, I think.
How about Deirdre?
I know.
Luella?
In Reber.
Okay, I think you've told me everything you know.
I have.
We drove on in silence, and finally the forest began to thin. I've lost sight of Morgenstern long ago, though I sometimes saw Julian's falcon pacing us. The road took a turn upward, and we were heading toward a pass between two purple mountains. The gas tank was a little better than a quarter full. Within an hour, we were passing between high shoulders of stone.
This would be a good place to set up a roadblock.
That sounds likely. What about it, Julian?
He sighed.
Yes. You should be coming upon one very soon. You know how to get by it.
We did. When we came to the gate and the guard in green and brown leather, sword unsheathed, advanced upon us, I jerked my thumb toward the back seat. Get the picture? He did, and he recognized us also. He hastened to raise the gate, and he saluted us as we passed by. There were two more gates before we made it through the pass, and somewhere along the way it appeared we had lost the hawk. We had gained several thousand feet in elevation now, and I braked the car on a road that crawled along the face of a cliff. To our right hand, there was nothing other than a long way down. Get out. You're going to take a walk. Julian paled.
I won't grovel. I won't beg you for my life.
And he got out. Hell, I haven't had a good grovel in weeks. Well, Goose, stand by the edge there. A little closer, please. And Random kept his pistol aimed at his head. A while back, you said that you would probably have supported anyone who occupied Eric's position.
That's right.
Look down. He did. It was a long way.
Okay, remember that. Should things undergo a sudden change, and remember who it was who gave you your life, where another would have taken it.
Come on, Random, let's get moving. We left him standing there, breathing heavily, his brows woven together. We reached the top and were almost out of gas. I put it in neutral, killed the engine, and began the long roll down.
I've been thinking you'd lost none of your old guile. I'd probably have killed him myself for what he'd tried. But I think you did the right thing. I think he will throw us his support, if we can get an edge on Eric. In the meantime, of course, he'll report what happened to Eric.
Of course.
And you have more reason to want him dead than any of us.
I smiled. Personal feelings don't make for good politics, legal decisions, or business deals. Random lit two cigarettes and handed me one. Staring downward through the smoke, I caught my first glimpse of that sea. Beneath the deep blue, almost nighttime sky, with that golden sun hanging up there in it, the sea was so rich, thick as paint, textured like a piece of cloth of royal blue, almost purple, that it troubled me to look upon it. I found myself speaking in a language that I hadn't realized I knew. I was reciting the Ballad of the Water Crossers, and Random listened until I had finished.
It has often been said that you composed that. Is it true?
It's been so long that I don't really remember anymore. And as the cliff curved further and further to the left, and as we swung downward across its face, heading toward a wooded valley, more and more of the sea came within our range of vision.
The lighthouse of Kappa.
Gesturing toward an enormous gray tower that rose from the waters, Mukes, out to sea.
I had all but forgotten it.
And I, It is a very strange feeling coming back. I realized then that we were no longer speaking English, but the language called Thari. After almost half an hour, we reached the bottom. I kept coasting for as far as I could, then turned on the engine. At its sound, a flock of dark birds heaved its way into the air from the shrubbery off to the left. Something gray and wolfish-looking broke from cover and dashed toward a nearby thicket. The deer it had been stalking, invisible till then, bounded away. We were in a lush valley, though not so thickly or massively wooded as the forest of Arden, which sloped gently but steadily toward the distant sea. High and climbing higher on the left, the mountains reared. The further we advanced into the valley, the better came our view of the nature and full extent of that massive height of rock, down one of whose lesser slopes we had coasted. The mountains continued their march to the sea, growing larger as they did so, and taking upon their shoulders a shifting mantle tinged with green, mauve, purple, gold, and indigo. The face they turned to the sea was invisible to us from the valley. But about the back of that final, highest peak swirled the faintest veil of ghost clouds, and occasionally the golden sun touched it with fire. I judged we were about 35 miles from the place of light, and the fuel gauge read near empty. I knew that the final peak was our destination, and an eagerness began to grow up within me. Random was staring in the same direction.
It's still there, I'd almost forgotten.
And as I shifted gears, I noticed that my trousers had taken on a certain sheen which they had not possessed before. Also, they were tapered considerably as they reached toward my ankles, and I noted that my cuffs had vanished. Then I noticed my shirt. It was more like a jacket, and it was black and trimmed with silver. And my belt had widened considerably. On closer inspection, I saw that there was a silver line down the outer seams of my pants legs. I found myself garbed effectively, I observed, to see what that wrought. Random chuckled, and I saw then that he had some were acquired brown trousers streaked with red and a shirt of orange and brown. A brown cap with a yellow border rested on the seat beside him.
I was wondering when you'd notice, how do you feel?
But good. And by the way, we're almost out of gas.
Too late to do much about that. We are now in the real world, and it would be a horrible effort to play with shadows. Also, but it would not go unnoticed. I'm afraid we'll have to hoof it when this gives out.
It gave out 2.5 miles later. I coasted off to the side of the road and stopped. The sun by now was westering farewell, and the shadows had grown long. Indeed. I reached into the back seat, where my shoes had become black boots, and something rattled as my hand groped after them. I drew forth a moderately heavy silver sword and scabbard. The scabbard fit my belt perfectly. There was also a black cloak with a clasp like a silver rose.
Had you thought them lost forever?
Damn near. We climbed out of the car and began walking. The evening was cool and briskly fragrant. There were stars in the east already, and the sun was diving toward its. We trudged along the road.
I don't feel right about this.
What do you mean?
Things have gone too easily thus far. I don't like it. We made it all the way through to the Forest of Arden with barely a hitch. True, Julian tried to take care of us there, but I don't know. We've made it so very far so readily that I'd almost suspect we were permitted to do it.
This thought has also crossed my mind. What do you think it portends?
I fear that we are walking into a trap.
We walked on for several minutes in silence. Ambush? These woods seem strangely still.
I don't know.
We made maybe 2 miles, and then the sun was gone. The night was black and studded with brilliant stars.
This is no way for two such as we to move.
True.
Yet I fear to fetch us steeds.
And I, also.
What is your assessment of the situation?
Death and Drek, I feel they may be upon us soon.
Do you think we should abandon the roadway?
And I've been thinking about it, and I don't see that it would hurt any for us to walk off to the side a bit. So we did. We passed among trees. We moved past the dark shapes of rocks and bushes, and the moon slowly rose big of silver and lighting up the night.
I'm taken by this feeling that we cannot do it.
And what reliance can we give this feeling?
Much, much.
Why?
Too far and too fast. I don't like it at all. Now we're in the real world. It is too late to turn back. We cannot play with shadows, but must rely on our blades.
He wore a short, burnished one himself.
I feel, therefore, that it is perhaps Eric's will that we have advanced to this point. There is nothing much to do about it now. But now we're here, I wish we'd had to battle for every inch of the way.
We continued for another mile and paused for cigarettes, which we held cupped in our hands. It's a lovely night, I said, to Random and the Kuai breeze.
I suppose. What was that?
There was a soft rustling of shrubbery, a bit of a way behind us. Some animal, maybe? His blade was in his band. We waited several minutes, but nothing more was heard. So we sheathed it and we started walking again. There were no more sounds from behind us, but after a time I heard something from up ahead. He nodded when I glanced at him, and we began to move more cautiously. There was a soft glow as from a campfire away, far in the distance. We heard no more sounds, but his shrug showed acquiescence to my gesture. As I headed toward it, into the woods, to the right. It was a better part of an hour before we struck the camp. There were four men seated about the fire and two sleeping off in the shadows. The girl who was bound to a stake had her head turned away from us. But I felt my heart quicken as I looked upon her form. Could that be?
Yes, I think it may.
Then she turned her head, and I knew it was. Deirdre!
I wonder what the bitch has been up to. From those guys' colors, I'd venture they're taking her back to Amber.
I saw that they wore black, red, and silver, which I remembered from the Trumps and from somewhere else to be the colors of Eric. Since Eric wants her, he can't have her.
I never much cared for Deirdre, but I know you do, so.
He unsheathed his blade. I did the same. Get ready, I told him, rising into a crouch. And we rushed them. Maybe 2 minutes. That's about what it took. She was watching us by then, the firelight making her face into a twisted mask. She cried and laughed and said our names in a loud and frightened voice, and I slashed her bonds and helped her to her feet. Greetings, sister. Will you join us on the road to Amber?
No, thanks for my life. But I want to keep it. Why do you walk to Amber? As if I didn't know.
There is a throne to be won.
Which was news to me.
And we are interested parties.
If you're smart, you stay away and live longer.
God. She was lovely, though a bit tired looking and dirty. I took her into my arms because I wanted to and squeezed her. Random found a skin of wine and we all had a drink.
Eric is the only prince in Amber, and the troops are loyal to him.
I'm not afraid of Eric. I knew I wasn't certain about that statement.
He'll never let you into Amber. I was a prisoner myself, till I made it out one of the secret ways 2 days ago. I thought I could walk in shadows till all things were done, but it is not easy to begin this close to the real place. So, his shrieks found me this morning. They were taking me back. I think he might have killed me, had I been returned, though I'm not sure. At any rate, I'd have remained a puppet in the city. I think Eric may be mad. Again, I'm not sure.
What of Blaze?
He sends things out of the shadows, and Eric is greatly disturbed. But he has never attacked with his real force, and so Eric is troubled, and the disposition of the crown and scepter remains uncertain, though Eric holds the one in his right hand.
I see. Has he ever spoken of us?
Not of you, Random, but of Corwin, yes. He still fears the return of Corwin to Amber. There is relative safety for perhaps 5 more miles. More beyond that, every step of the way is studded with peril. Every tree and rock is a booby trap and an ambush. Because of Blaze and because of Corwin. He wanted you to get at least this far, so that you could not work with shadows nor easily escape his power. It is absolutely impossible for either of you to enter into Amber without falling into one of his traps.
Yet you escaped.
That was different. I was trying to get out, not in. Perhaps he did not guard me so carefully as he would one of you, because of my sex and my lack of ambition. And nevertheless, as you can see, I did not succeed.
You have now, sister, so long as my blade is free to swing on your behalf. She kissed my brow and squeezed my hand. I was always a sucker for that.
I'm sure we're being followed.
And with a gesture, the three of us faded into the darkness. We lay still beneath a bush, keeping watch on our trail. After a time, our whispers indicated that there was a decision for me to make. The question was really quite simple. What next? The question was too basic and I couldn't stall anymore. I knew I couldn't trust them, even dear Deirdre. But if I had to level with anybody, Random was at least in this thing with me. Up to his neck, and Detre was my favorite. Beloved relatives, I have a confession to make. Random's hand was already on the hilt of his blade. That's how far we could trust one another. I could already hear his mind clicking. Corwin brought me here to betray me, he was saying to himself.
If you brought me here to betray me, you won't take me back alive.
Are you kidding? I want your help, not your head. What I have to say is just this. I don't know what the hell's going on. I have made some guesses, but I don't really know where the devil we are, what Amber is, or why we're crouched here in the bushes hiding from his troops, or for that matter, who I am, really. There was an awfully long silence.
What do you mean?
Yes.
I mean, then I managed to fool you, Random. Didn't you think it strange that all I did on this trip was drive the car?
You were the boss, and I figured you were planning. You did some pretty shrewd things along the way. I know that you're Corwin.
Which is a thing I only found out a couple of days ago. Myself, I know that I am the one you call Corwin, but I was in an accident a while back. I had head injuries. I'll show you the scars when we've got more light and I'm suffering from amnesia. I don't dig all this talk about shadows. I don't even remember much about Amber. All I remember is my relatives and the fact that I can't trust them much. That's my story. What's to be done about it?
Christ, yes, I can see it now. I understand all the little things that puzzled me along the way. How did you take Flora in so completely?
Luck and subconscious sneakiness, I guess. No, that's not it. She was stupid. Now I really need you, though.
Do you think we can make it into the shadows?
And she was not speaking to me.
Yes, but I'm not for it. I'd like to see Corwin and Amber, and I'd like to see Eric's head on a pole. I'm willing to take a few chances to see these things, so I'm not turning back to the shadows. You can if you want. You all think I'm a weakling and a bluff. Now you're going to find out. I'm going to see this through.
Thanks, brother. Ill met by moonlight.
You could still be tied to a stake.
She did not reply. We lay there a while longer, and three men entered the campsite and looked about. Then two of them bent down and sniffed at the ground. Then they looked in our direction. They moved in our direction. I saw it happen, though only in shadow. They dropped to all fours in the moonlight, played tricks with their gray garments. Then there were the six blazing eyes of our stalkers. I impaled the first wolf on my silver blade, and there was a human howl. Random beheaded one with a single blow, and to my amazement, I saw Deirdre rise one in the air and break its back across her knee with a brittle, snapping sound.
Quick, your blade.
I ran his victim through in hers, and there were more cries.
We better move fast this way.
We followed, after perhaps an hour of furtive movement through the undergrowth.
Where are we going?
To the sea.
Why?
It holds Corwin's memory.
Where? How?
Reba, of course.
They kill you there and feed your brains to the fishes.
I'm not going the full distance. You'll have to take over at the shore and talk with your sister's sister.
You mean for him to take the pattern again?
Yes.
It's risky.
I know. Listen, Corwin, you've been decent enough with me recently. If by some chance you're not really Corwin, you're dead. You've got to be, though. You can't be someone else. Not from the way you've operated, without memory even. No, I'll bet your life on it. Take a chance and try the thing called the pattern. Odds are it'll restore your memory. Are you game?
Probably, but what is the pattern?
Reba is the ghost city. It is the reflection of Amber within the sea. In it, everything in Amber is duplicated, as in a mirror. The Wellas people live there and dwell as though in Amber. They hate me for a few past peccadilloes, so I cannot venture there with you. But if you would speak them fair and perhaps hint at your mission, I feel they would let you walk the pattern of Rebma, which, while it is the reverse of that in Amber, should have the same effect. That is, it gives to a son of our father the power to walk among shadows.
How will this power help me?
It should make you to know what you are.
Then I'm game.
Good man. In that case, we'll keep heading south. It will take several days to reach the stairway. You will go with him, Deirdre.
I will go with my brother Corwin.
I knew she would say that, and I was glad. I was afraid, but I was glad. We walked all that night. We avoided three parties of armed troops, and in the morning we slept in a cave.